hope I can give a good talk so that you know, it worth your staying here. So I think my job is a little bit easier because a lot of stuff, you know, the background and the models are actually being introduced by previous talks. So basically what we're trying to do here is to uncover the cooperative regulation by transcription factors and microRNAs using a Bayesian, it's a regression factor model, you know, or we call this a hybrid factor model. So what's the objective? Okay, the objective is to understand how gene expression, basically transcription, is being regulated by transcription factor. This is common knowledge. And microRNA, it's a small molecule that's recently uncovered to know also regulate transcription. So what is approach? So basically I want to convince you that we can use this Bayesian factor model to serve this purpose, and building this model on top of microarray expression data and a lot of biological prior knowledges. So just a little bit of background, which has already been introduced by a lot of previous speakers. So this is a central dogma of molecular biology. So it's suffice to say that you know, normally we say information flow goes from DNA, mRNA, in the end, the protein. Protein is a basic building block of all living cells. So here, you know, my focus is on transcription. So basically, how DNA is being transcribed into mRNA. Well, this process here looks linear, but actually it's being heavily regulated. Okay, and mainly it's being regulated by two factors. Or the first one is a protein, it's called transcription factor. So now you're looking at the DNA. Okay, the transcription basically is a copying of one chain in the DNA into this small molecule, into this molecule called mRNA, and then mRNA being later translate to protein. So the first regulator is called transcription factor, and it binds to the so-called promoter region of a gene. So for example, this is a gene, and then it controls the product of or expression, in short, the mRNA. And further, you know, recently people also understand that another small molecule actually is called microRNA. It's now I wrote it as a miRNA. It's a little bit confusing with micro. It actually binds in the so-called promoter region of the mRNA, and it serves to degrade mRNA. So actually, you know, together, transcription factor and microRNA together actually kind of better explain the complexity of the living cell, why we have this diversity. Traditionally, if we only look at transcription factor, we pretty much have a similar set of a transcription factor, but we are so different. Why? So microRNA actually give you another layer of explanation. So here, my goal is, okay, right now, you know, we have technology, microarray high-throughput sequencing that can be used to really measure mRNA. Okay, so for example, we have microarray, which also been introduced by several previous speakers. And also, it happened to be that we can also, since this is also RNA, we can also measure microRNA. So the goal here is to really understand how mRNA or gene transcription is being regulated by microRNA and transcription factor based on mRNA measurement or microRNA measurement in this particular case and microRNA measurement. So before it's supposed to be highlighted in yellow, but now it's black. So basically that's the goal here. All right, so that's these are the two factors. Okay, so let's see what are the common approach that's been taken. So basically, this is called gene network in a very simple way. So you probably see these things quite often, right? So it's a very messy network. Well, normally each node represents a gene, and then you have links linking these different genes. So commonly, the meaning here is pretty much says, okay, if two genes are linked, they are correlated, they are associated. But the problem here is how do we interpret, especially if I want to understand transcription regulation, what does this linking really tells me about transcription regulation, right? So it's very, very difficult, actually, because all these only says gene are associated. It doesn't say whether the gene association is through the transcription regulation or through protein interaction and so on and so forth. So this is actually, I've been working on this before, but you know, kind of stay away because it's so hard to interpret. And when you present to a biologist, they don't know what, I don't even know what to tell them, and they don't know how to interpret. So basically, I want to, you know, look at the more detail about the biology and see whether we can really model this process of transcription regulation and microRNA regulation. So start by modeling, like everybody does here. So we assume that the transcription factor is a protein. So the protein activity, we call this X. So the activity, basically a little bit of, about abundance, basically. The more transcription factor you have, possibly, regulates quite a bit of gene transcription. So we use X to represent transcription factor protein level activity, and then using Z to denote the expression level of microRNA, okay? And then we're saying since microRNA and transcription factor regulates the gene product, which is mRNA, where we call Y, which can be measured by the microRNA data, and here we call Y. And then we can relate this relationship by a simple linear relationship, okay? Or we say, okay, the mRNA expression level is due to the regulation or the abundance of activity, protein level activity of transcription factor, or X, and the microRNA expression level, okay? And A and B are the so-called regulatory coefficients, okay? So this is a very simple model, and this is pretty much just says, okay, in the case, model the case where there's only one transcription factor and one microRNA, but reality actually is a lot more complicated where you involve a lot of microRNA, a lot of transcription factors. So, and again, you're going to have a model like this for one mRNA. And again, if you really model the entire genome where you have possibly 20 to 40,000 genes, and then you're looking at basically a matrix like this. In this particular case, the measurement, mRNA expression, this is a matrix where each row represents a gene and each column represents a sample or a condition, a patient, and so on and so forth, or time points. And the values here, represent the expression mRNA abundance here. So, and similarly, X here represent, let me see, yes, so that's gene, that's sample, and X is the transcription factor abundance, X, and Z is the microRNA activity, sorry, this is wrong, and where, as I said before, this can be measured, okay, this can be measured by microRNA or high throughput sequencing, and A is the so-called regulatory strength, and the B is the microRNA regulatory strength, okay? And E is the additive white noise. All right, so basically we're looking at this equation now. We're given Y and Z. We try to basically represent Y and Z based on this model. So this is a goal. So data is given Y and Z, we want to understand A, B, and X, okay? All right, so how are we going to really achieve this? Traditionally, this type of model is really a factor regression model. This part is a factor model. This part is a regression model. Okay, so this is nothing new. However, and the solutions. So you can see a couple of different solutions. PCA, IC has already been introduced by Nicholas and NMF. However, I want to argue that this type of model are not really sufficient to really model the detailed biology. Why? So the reason, I'll give you a very simple reason here. For example, we're looking at, this is a relatively real scenario, you kind of get a sense, okay? If you want to use PCA to kind of model this, basically PCA says the loading matrix where this is A is a loading matrix, A is a loading matrix. So loading matrix must be full rank, okay, fully loaded. However, now we know that each gene transcription factor actually regulates only a very small set of genes, okay, well, relative, okay, so up to 1,000 or a couple of thousand of genes. Still, in terms of the overall number of genes, which is 20,000 to 40,000, this is sparse, highly sparse. So the loading matrix should be highly sparse. And also, where you have regulation, where are non-zero elements can be, we already accumulated a lot of prior knowledge as to which, transcription factor regulate what set of a gene. So we should be able to, incorporate this type of prior knowledge. And thirdly, so these samples, actually, you look at the sample. These samples, like I told you, represent, for example, patients, the patient measurements. And in the case of a disease, some patients actually have similar expression patterns, and meaning that these can be used to define the subtype of the disease. So if you have a similar subtype, your expression level should be similar. So these columns are actually should be correlated to really represent the context. So something like this, I stack X and Z together, this is a transcription factor activity, this is microRNA, then you should have these correlations, you should have these groupings, okay, in the sense. And while in PCA, it doesn't really model things like this. And also, while the transcription factor activity should be non-negative, like what Nicholas also argued, But that was in the case of a gene, but very similar argument. So we need to model really non-negative transcription factor activity. Well, in the case of microRNA known to downregulate the transcription, so its loading matrix must be negative. Okay, so this matrix actual values needs to be negative. So we need to somehow incorporate all these detailed biology into the model in order to do a good job. Okay, so basically, I'm going to tell you how we model all these each one of these items using Bayesian. Okay, so to start with, basically the modeling goal is to model the sparsity A and B, incorporate existing knowledge, and basically model the non-negative transcription factor activity and the negative regulation of microRNA, and then the sample correlations. Okay, so we need to model a lot of things in this model. So to start with the sparsity, we use exactly the same model as what Nicholas, Jean-Yves, and Al actually was using here. Well, this pi, I just want to point out, actually, this pi basically denotes the probability, okay? The probability of transcription factor L regulating gene. And so this can be really, there's a lot of prior knowledge available from the database. So we can really incorporate these prior knowledge into pi. And so this is how we model the sparsity of A. Well, in the case of a B, actually, very similar model. The only difference is here, now we have to use a truncated Gaussian to really model the downregulation of a microRNA. Okay? So B is the regulatory matrix of microRNA. So that's the only difference. And pi, again, is a prior knowledge. And there's databases and also target. Well, as to the point of microRNA regulation, this is still a very active research. So we don't really know exactly how microRNA regulate the genes, not at the level of transcription factor yet, but there are target prediction algorithms that can be used to really give you some prior knowledge here. So that's how we model the sparsity and incorporate the prior knowledge of a pi. And then let's move on to X. X needs to be non-negative, transcription factor activity. So instead of using actually truncated Gaussian, we use a rectified Gaussian. The only difference is we have a mass actually at zero. This possibly there are two advantages of using rectified Gaussian. One is it introduces additional sparsity, actually, even in the transcription factor activity. And also, it gives a very nice conjugate formation for the Bayesian and Bayesian derivation. So that's how we model the non-negative factors. And then going to the correlation, sample correlation, define, for example, subtypes of the patients, we use basically the assumptions that these, the samples that are in the same group are clustered. So it's a natural cluster modeling. So mixture Gaussian. And the problem with mixture Gaussian is you don't know the number of clusters. So we actually use a Dirichlet process of mixture. Now, it's not a mixture Gaussian. It's a mixture Dirichlet process of mixture rectified Gaussian in this particular case. But we indeed use a Dirichlet process here. So putting everything together, this is pretty much what the model looks like. So we have all these different priors restrict basically how you do the factor analysis or projection. And if you put in a graphical model, this is how it looks like. Okay. So a lot of parameters to estimate, and for sure we can't really derive the analytical solution, so we have to resort to some of the traditional sampling approach. For example, in deep sampling. Fortunately, in this case, because of this very careful chosen of prior distributions, we have conditional distributions in closed form. So basically, this is a quick look of deep sampling, but I'm not going to dwell on the derivation. It's very long derivation. You can take a look at the paper, but it's suffice to say we are able to really create this deep sampling solution. So we start by looking at the simulation data, whereas in this particular case we have 100 genes and with 7 transcription factors, 7 microRNA. This is commensurate with the a real situation I'm going to talk about in a later slide. So, and we assume there are 5 clusters in the samples. And there are totally 35 samples in this case. So we look at basically the performance of estimating X and A. Well, here I'm talking about the correlations with the real, but actually we also have MSE, mean square error estimator. And we'll also look at the sparsity, in terms of the precision and recall and the cluster performance. So this just gives you an idea how samples are converging, basically. In this particular case, actually converges relatively fast, okay? But of course, this depends heavily on what kind of a different settings, the noise, variance, and so on and so forth. But generally, it converges relatively fast. So this is the cluster ID. So in this case, we assume there are two clusters. You can see it actually converges fairly fast. So this is, we actually look at the performance for different noise conditions with the increase of noise variance. And for example, in this case, we look at this is the so-called estimate of a non-negative elements of the sparring matrix, and we look at the precision, and when the noise actually increases, the precision actually, when the noise increases, actually precision actually goes, well, it somehow goes up and then goes down in this particular case. And if you look at the clustering, actually clustering performance degrades with the, and also the estimations degrades with the increase of the noise. And then we look at the database, because we incorporate knowledge, and the database has problems. So there are two types of problems. First of all, whether the database really covers all the known knowledge, and secondly, whether the database, whatever the database requires, whether they are true. So this is basically, a precision, again, the precision recall problem. So we set up a different precision recall of the database and look at, again, evaluate the performance. What can be seen here is as long as the database precision increases, if whatever being reported in the database is true, and we'll be able to really recover almost 100% of these regulations, basically non-zero elements. I can skip this performance and just jump right into the real data parts. Well, for the real data, actually, we're looking at we're using the Cancer Genome Atlas database, where this is an NIH supported project, and we particularly look at the glioblastoma. It's a brain cancer. We look at about 400 patients, and where they have a microRNA mRNA gene expression data, and then about 200 patients having the microRNA measurement as well. So we need to have both measurements. So we need to also have the so-called clinical data, survival data, in order to really look at, later on I'm going to show whether the prediction is reasonable or not. So putting all this together, just look at, extract the samples that satisfy all these conditions, having microRNA measurement, mRNA measurement, and the clinical data, in the end, we can only, we can only work with 47 actually patient samples. And in addition, we also include one normal. Okay, as a control. So we have 47 samples, so 48 samples altogether. And then we go to the literature, and also go to our collaborators, and just to ask, what are the important transcription factors, or what are the transcription factors that are important for glioblastoma. And then and microRNAs, and then we actually isolated about seven transcription factors and seven microRNAs. Yes. Okay. And so with this, we go to the database and see what are the genes that possibly regulate by these seven transcription factors and seven microRNAs. And we come up with 135 genes. So suffice to say that these 135 genes are regulated by these seven microRNA, seven transcription factors in many, many different conditions, because these prior knowledge are derived from many, many different conditions, but they are not necessarily true, particularly to glioblastoma case. Okay, so and then for as to the prior knowledge for transcription factor regulation, we go to the transfect and then extract these regulatory. Prior knowledge. And for microRNA regulation, actually, we have our in-house prediction algorithms published in these two papers. So that's all the setups of the experiment. And then this is the inferred the probability, posterior probability of non-zero elements. And as you can see, most of them are non-zero, or the probability of one is very, very small. And only a small set of the probability actually give you close to one. So, and then among all these possible links, we uncover about 100 regulations. So this is highly sparse. And actually, interestingly, when we look at the uncovered regulations, there are about 149 reported in the database and 11 in the database are not really uncovered, but we pick up 7 additional new regulations which are not really reported in the database. And then this is the so-called regulatory network. And this actually, each node on this side represents a transcription factor. Each node on this side represents microRNA. And the circle here, there are small nodes actually stacked together, and they are represent genes. And each link has very clear interpretations. So if you have a link here, pretty much it means that this transcription factor regulates that gene. And also, we can use the loading matrix, the values of loading matrix, to indicate whether this regulation of transcription factor is upregulation or downregulation. Well, for microRNA, it's always downregulation. And this is a heat map of the loading matrix. So there are a lot of zeros basically here. This is uncovered the transcription factor activity or the factor models, and together with the measurement of the microRNA. But this is the fold change. Remember, I tell you in the sample there's a normal sample. So we basically use a normal sample as a control to calculate the fold change. Otherwise, transcription factor values should be all positive. Okay. And then this is the cluster that's been uncovered by the model. So basically, the model uncovers 3 clusters. And then, as you can see, the expression levels are more or less the same within the cluster. And then we look at the survival for each group of these clusters and see whether they do form some type of a subtype cancer. So the way we look at it, so we look at the survival, okay? See whether after treatment, the patient in the same group have a similar survival. So as you can see, the different groups, patients in different groups, indeed have different survival, meaning that this separation does mean something, okay? Can indicate, basically, if you see a patient in this group, you can say that this patient, possibly after treatment, can live longer than the patient in this green group, okay? And then we look at the p-value of the pairwise survivals, clearly shows the group, the cluster 1 and cluster 2 actually has the largest survival difference. So they can be really used to indicate the survival of the effectiveness of the treatment. And so we were going back to the microRNA and the expression data and see whether you can come up with a similar result by simply using microRNA data and the gene data and the combined microRNA and gene data without going through the factor analysis, just basically perform clustering directly on these individual data. And the conclusion is no. These are the p-values. Actually, this is our performance. This is a log p-value. And so we have significantly actually higher p-value than if you look at microRNA gene or microRNA gene together alone, okay, without using the factor analysis. So this really shows the effectiveness of this factor model, okay. So that pretty much concludes my talk. So I can skip this and just quickly thank the funding from NIH and NSF. Okay, thank you.
All right. Thank you. 1 or 2 questions? Yes, Al?
Yes.
In both of your examples, you had quite a small number of genes. Right. Is the factor analysis method that you have sort of restricted to very small samples so far? Yeah.
I had a curiosity question about your model. Can you go back?
Sure, sure. Yeah. Which one you want to look at?
Yeah. The matrix form. Mm-hmm. Yes, this one is okay.
This one?
Yeah. So is there any identifiability problem? I mean, of course, if you have Y and Z, can you find a unique solution for A, X, and B? Of course, for AX, we know that they are...
Yes. Yeah, very good question. Actually, there's something really worth studying here. I can't give you a theoretical proof whether there's identifiability. So, additional things I haven't really talked about. For example, we have to restrict that let me talk about here. So, the factor needs to have a unit variance, actually. And also the columns of A's needs to have the same variance actually for the columns. And also the variance of X and Z should be, so we have to do some print processing to make the variance of A and Z to be in the same scale in
I
order
see.
To have a identifiable A and B. Right?
Okay.
But whether there, what is the condition for identifiability, I can't really answer at this stage. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for staying till the end. And have a good trip back.